It is me, it is the Luminary, and you're listening to The Truth Stand from Charlotte, North Carolina, saying you can chase a lie all over the world, but the truth, it stands where it stands. And we're taking a stand here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I am recording behind the platinum blue microphone. I am behind the C922 Logitech cam. I am behind the Dell Inspiron 66 whatever. To my right, I have the Pixel 2 XL. And to my, well, it's not any longer to my left because it's sitting in the den somewhere. And that's my Galaxy Tab S4. But I don't need the Galaxy Tab S4 today because I am doing what is called the Quickie Truth. Now, what is the Quickie Truth? The Quickie Truth is basically a miniature version of my podcast. So what I do here is there's an issue I want to talk about. It's something that I care deeply about. It's something that I just want to just communicate it because I don't want to wait to Sunday. And I also don't want to include it in my Sunday's podcast, which is completely dedicated to the church. But here's the thing. I talk about more things than just what's going on in the church. I do talk about the world at large, at least the stuff that I feel like I am very well informed about. Things that I have lots of knowledge about, or things that I just find to really spark me and it really gives me energy to learn more about it, to get in more detail. There are things out there that I just don't care about that are really important, but there are more qualified people than me to be able to go over those things, okay? So I just do what I know to do best. I stay in my lane. On Sunday, I talk mostly about the church, but there are times where I think other issues that are happening in the world are just as important, but I don't want to include it in the Sunday podcast. So this is called the Quickie Truth, okay? If you missed my last Quickie Truth had to do with a girl who got fired at Chipotle because five African-Americans, black dudes, decided to accuse her of racism because they were what's called dine and dashers. They were people who decided to buy food at a place and then cut out without paying, okay? Al Bundy, Peggy Bundy type of style, if you ever watched Married with Children. I'm dating myself there, am I not? I'm basically telling everybody how old I am now. But with that being said, they tried to accuse her of racism. They put it all over social media. Chipotle knee-jerked and fired her. And then 2 days later, they rehired her because they realized that they were wrong, because she was right. These people were diner and dashers, and she knew that. And that's why she did what she did, okay? Now, I don't know if she actually took the job back. She shouldn't, personally, in my opinion. She should sue them for unfair dismissal. But that's just me. But I talked about how I thought that the entire incident from start to finish was a complete microcosm of what is wrong with America and what's destroying America. And what's destroying America is something called intersectionality, racialized politics, or the politics of victimhood. Basically, it's the politics of dividing people into classes. And then depending on how many classes you belong to, that increases your victimhood status in our world. And so the greater victim you are in our world, the more important you have in our world when you speak on things. So those people get to always claim that they're being disenfranchised, that they're being discriminated against, that racism is all over the place. There are people who believe that this country is still nothing but pure racism straight up, and that everything that they believe in, that everything that they see has to do with the fact that America is still just a completely bigoted and racist country. And there's just so much to say about that, because unfortunately, that stuff is now finding its way into our church through the, quote, social justice warrior movements and things like that. So I think it is important for me to address these issues as the Lord leads me in that direction, as I see things that interest me, okay? So I'm going to read an article to you, and the title is called Today's Microscopic Racism is Light Years from Real Oppression. Light Years from Real Oppression, okay? I make this argument all the time that I wish I can take a lot of African Americans and a lot of liberal whites who think that America is just as oppressive as it's ever been. It's just as bigoted. It's just as racist. It's just as horrible. I wish I can bring you back to the time when that was not the case. I wish I can take you back to a time when, no, it was real, it was legit, it was legal. It was the way of life, lynchings, beatings, all sorts of other discrimination that everyone just turned their back on, or they just turned a blind eye to. There was a time in this country when racism was horrible and despicable and pure evil, okay? But that's not today. Oh, sure, there are some racism still existing in this world, but it's microscopic at best. And it's not the number one problem facing the black community. Fatherless homes, poor education, and just an overall poor attitude about America and about the plight of black people and the future of black people are the three major problems with the African-American community. But racism is not one of them. But I tell you what is one of the problems: being taught that that is the problem. See, this world is all about narratives. This world is about what you can get people to believe now. This world is no longer about the truth. I was watching this very interesting video on YouTube that I'm going to talk more about in the future, but by this guy named Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff was speaking at a TED Talks event. And if you don't know what TED Talks is, TED Talks is basically a forum where a bunch of people who have done prominent things in their lives, or people who are considered luminaries in certain fields, basically give speeches about certain topics to help us understand things better, to bring different perspective to the world around us. And so Eric Bischoff was there. Eric Bischoff is the former head of what was called WCW. That's World Championship Wrestling. If anyone's familiar with pro wrestling, you're familiar with also the WWE. It used to be called the WWF. We're talking about Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, those sorts of things, okay? So Eric Bischoff has been a very successful human being. And so Eric Bischoff basically had a speech at a TED Talks where he basically said, the news today is like professional wrestling. You have heels, you have baby faces, and you have a story to tell. And basically, his whole point was that there's no such thing as truth on the television anymore when it comes to the news. There's no such thing as truth. And the reason why it doesn't exist is because their desire is not to give you information. It's to give you affirmation. And the most important thing is to get you stirred up emotionally. That's the number one thing about television and the media, is to stir you up emotionally. It's to get you to feel a certain way. And based on how you feel, that's how you're going to react. I am a true believer that this is why America, or particularly African Americans, feel the way they feel about America. Because when all you see on TV and hear on TV is how bigoted and racist America is, I mean, how else are you going to feel? These people are tapping into old passions of anger and hate towards this country based upon some past things that happened, based upon slavery, things like that. And all the media does, it continues to blow dog whistles and it continues to scratch that area of our society or our emotions that evoke an emotional reaction. And it has caused great balkanization and tribalization. In other words, divided classes of people. And it's terrible. It's disgusting. But a couple remarks about just some things that I care about, right? Things that I know about. Can we please give Colin Kaepernick a job so he can then fail, so he can then move on with his life, so we can all just move on with our lives? I am so tired of one of the phoniest stories to ever have been created, Colin Kaepernick. I'm sorry, it's stupid. It's the worst story I've ever seen. It is a story that is a microcosm, and I keep using that word, but it's exemplar, or it is something that is illustrative of what is happening in this country. All you have to do is tell people a good story. That's all people want to hear. And all people want to hear is something that they're willing to believe, something that they're willing to accept based upon what they've already have accepted to begin with. If you have accepted that this country is bigoted and racist, any other story that comes out as it regards someone of color or as it regards somebody in some sort of situation where there's an opposite race involved, you are going to be inclined to think something racial happened because you've been programmed to believe that. And this whole Colin Kaepernick thing is all about this. He doesn't have a job. Why? Because most of the owners are white. Why? Because they're a bunch of bigots. Why? Because Colin Kaepernick stood up for injustice. Okay, which is phony, by the way, because I'm going to read about that in just a moment. So the idea is that, well, it's a collusion and conspiracy against Colin Kaepernick to not give him any job in the NFL because the owners are a bunch of white racists and they hated his political view because they're racist and because our country is racist. Even though Colin Kaepernick was offered a job with the Denver Broncos and he turned it down. Even though he was tried out by the Seattle Seahawks and a couple other teams and they passed. You want to know why? Because Colin Kaepernick had one good season, then the next season he got exposed, and then the following season the San Francisco 49ers started off 2-6, he got benched by some journeyman named Blaine Gabbert, and that was the end of Colin Kaepernick, because he got exposed as a one-trick pony. That's why that dude isn't in the NFL. And even if someone thought he was talented enough to be in the NFL, he has way too much drama, way too many issues for somebody to bring them onto the staff for somebody who, quite frankly, may or may not be that great. Okay, so I'm done with that. What I'm also kind of perturbed about, if you can tell by my energy, and for those of you who are still watching on the Facebook, you can tell that I'm a little peeved. Why? Because I just live in a country of just stupid stuff. We elect stupid people. Why? Because once again, someone gave you a story and you, like an idiot, fell for it. I present to you Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, better known as Socialist Babe, number one, okay? This woman is an idiot. Not only is she an idiot, but she's a dangerous idiot because she's pretty, she sounds emotional and passionate, and she is telling poor people who have failed in life what they want to hear. Those are three recipes for disaster. Because people like that can gain power, and without any practical real-world experience, they become theoreticians monkeying around. Yes, I said the term monkeying around. They monkey around with everything that's going on in our society. They just monkey around with it. It's craziness. So I'm reading this article from the Daily Wire, and she's up here commenting about, oh, she thinks it's so unfair that staffers of Democrats and Republicans, well, mainly Democrats, are having to work second and third jobs to make ends meet. Quote, this is her in a series of tweets. She says, it's just unjust. See, that's a buzzword, unjust. She's going to use that a lot. Democrats use that a lot. Unfair and unjust. Because when you use those words, it basically says that it's corrupt from the foundation. So therefore, the issue isn't you. Or if it is you, it's just kind of you, but it's really more of the system. So therefore, what does that mean? We have to change the entire system now, don't we? That's why they keep using words like unjust and unfair. And they keep talking about the need for social justice because it's all about demonizing an entire system. It is unjust for Congress to budget a living wage for ourselves, yet rely on unpaid interns and underpaid overworked staff just because Republicans want to make a statement about fiscal responsibility. If that's the case, they can cut down on staff to pay them or raise the MRA, and I'm not sure what the MRA is, okay? And then what happens is she gets a response and they ask how you're going to pay for it. This is Ocasio-Cortez's technique. Anytime she's challenged on how she wants to pay for all these wild ideas she has, this is her typical response.
Gotta love the rich irony of congressmen asking how are you going to pay for it. Suddenly grow awfully quiet when called out on their expectation that part-time workers magically invent money to work for free.
First of all, I don't even understand what most of that meant. But her thing is to say, well, You're only criticizing me because you're some rich white guy. And, oh, it's rich that you're criticizing me instead of dealing with the real issue. No, you're being criticized because you're stupid and you're wrong, and you're being challenged. Because the number one question behind all these wild policies is, how are you going to pay for it? Because it's got to come from somebody. But their answer, and they dare not tell you the answer, that it needs to come from the rich, or it needs to come from people like me, to redistribute my money that I worked hard for, to give it to people who didn't work hard for it. That's the real answer. That's her answer. That's everybody in the Democrat Party's answer. And sadly to say, many in the establishment Republican Party. And I'm sorry, I'm not buying that. What really offends me is to find out, as a congresswoman, she makes $174,000 a year. And that's the base salary. Think about that. $174,000. For what? What has she accomplished? She's 29 years old, graduated from Boston College, and has done absolutely nothing but get elected. It doesn't take a genius to get elected. Just lie and convince a bunch of other stupid people that you're telling the truth. And there it is. Come on, man. I mean, do you know how many important people in our society, that don't make $100,000 or $174,000? Do you know how many important people there are that don't make any money like that, man? It's embarrassing. It is disgraceful. It's utterly repugnant that someone like this woman is talking about the unfair of others, and yet she's now in the 1% for no reason other than she got elected. That's my taxpayer dollar. That's my money. There are doctors who don't even make $174,000. There are lawyers who don't even make $174,000 a year. There are people, medics, firefighters, policemen, teachers, people who do very important work that actually serve a true purpose, unlike Congress people who serve themselves. And yes, I meant every word of that. What are they making $174,000 for? But yeah, she wants to complain as if she's one of the others. No, you're not, sweetheart. You're one of the 1% now. And that's one of the richest ironies in politics. A lot of these people that are talking about, oh, we need to raise your minimum wage, and we need to do all this and that, and the rich need to pay for it. But they're the rich. Democrats are richer than Republicans. Did you know that? Nah, you didn't, because the media won't tell you. And you don't know because you're too stupid to figure it out. All right, so I've said all I needed to say. So when I come back, I'm going to get into this article. Once again, the article is, "Today's Microscopic Racism is Light Years from Real Oppression." I'll be right back. You are listening to The Truth Stand on thetruthstand.org. This is The Luminary, and I am the host of The Truth Stand. And once again, I am broadcasting from Charlotte, North Carolina, in the glorious Truth Stand Studios. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. So the article that I am getting back to today is, "Today's Microscopic Racism is Light Years from Real Oppression." What I'm going to do is I'm just going to let this article speak for itself. It's in a publication called The Town Hall, written by Will Alexander, who happens to be a poet. Now, of course, here's the disclaimer. The opinions expressed by the columnists are their own and do not represent the views of Town Hall. So that's how you know it's good. When they have to put a disclaimer, that's how you know it's good. All right, so check this out. And I'm just going to read from start to finish, people. I was born in the Deep South in 1959, 4 years after Rosa Parks' arrest, in a state that seceded from the Union before the outbreak of the Civil War. In my early life, Jim Crow laws were still enforced, and although the Civil Rights Act enforced desegregation in 1964, Jim Crow attitudes remained unwritten laws in the hearts of most whites in the nooks and crannies of my city. I attended segregated elementary schools, fought in race riots in junior high school, and was nearly murdered in the mid-70s when I took a turn innocently into the wrong neighborhood as a high schooler. A white man roaming the streets in his car to find random blacks to shoot tried to kill me and two of my friends with 8 well-aimed gunshots from his illegal M14 rifle. 2 shots blew through my gas tank. 1 hit Rudy in his left shoulder. The rest punctured different parts of my car, which I never drove again. Back then, racial oppression was real. Today, it's pure fiction. Used as a tactic for political power, as nostalgia for blacks and whites who missed out on the glory days of the Civil Rights Movement, as a cover for envy, and as an axe over the heads of whites who dread the high cost of being labeled as racist. When I think of real oppression in America's bad old days compared to today's oppression, 2 stories flash in my mind. 1 was about George Lewis, known to history as Slave George, owned by Lily Byrne and Isham Lewis. George accidentally broke a water pitcher that belonged to their mother. In a fit of demonic rage, the brothers tied the teenager to the floor, lit up a fireplace, and forced other slaves to witness what happens when slaves get lazy. Lily Byrne chopped George's neck with an axe, then ordered a slave to cut him up piece by piece and throw his body parts into the fire as petrified slaves watched. The dismemberment went on until 2 a.m. For the record, murdering and mutilating slaves was illegal in Kentucky. When the news hit town, the brothers were arrested, and because such pariahs that Lilliburn committed suicide shortly after his bail. The butchery shocked 19th century sensibilities, but it would have never been possible without social numbness to the particular institution. That was real racism. The second story is about Isaac Woodard, who grew up in my birth state of North Carolina. Wearing his army uniform, he boarded a Greyhound bus in 1946, bound for the Carolinas after serving in World War II. When the bus came to a rest stop, Sergeant Woodard told the driver he needed to use the restroom. When the driver refused, the two argued a bit before Woodard was finally given permission to relieve himself. The driver called the police. Police at a South Carolina rest stop forcibly removed the sergeant from the bus, beat him with a nightstick in a nearby alley, and punched his eyes as they took him to jail on fake charges of drinking beer at the back of the bus. While in jail, police beat Woodard so badly in his eyes with a billy club that they gouged his eyes out. Each globe was ruptured from the sockets beyond repair. He left jail blind with partial amnesia. That was real racism. What passes for racism today is a joke, shameful, and desecrates the bitter toil of blacks and whites who shed their blood believing that their sacrifice would someday help strengthen the fragile bonds of brotherhood between the races. Their lives made that bond sacred. Baseless, reckless accusations of racism spit on centuries of painstaking progress. You know there's something pathological going on when a black man can be elected president twice, and we now talk on more racial eggshells than ever before. Last week, I watched CNN's Don Lemon and Charles Blow, 2 multimillionaires, have a lopsided conversation about the need to have a conversation about race. And by the way, when people say that, what they typically mean is that you racist white people need to shut up and listen to me complain about how racist you are. And anything you try to say in retaliation to that will not be heard. That's what they mean. It typically is a one-sided conversation. Back to the article. They complained with great exasperation about a Kansas City official, Lewis Klimp, who told a black woman at a hearing that they were part of a master race because they both have gaped teeth. She snickered, appearing to take the corny joke for what it was. But pontificating from TV land, Lemon and Blow were breathlessly dumbfounded about how such a toxic environment has been created in America that a white man could feel free to use such vile Nazi term and to think it's okay whether or not he should continue in his job was a no-brainer. Now, in fairness, what that guy said was inappropriate and that was horrible, okay? But by no means is that something that needs to have people come unglued and act and to use that as yet another example of why America's racist. That's one thing that happens in this country is that we take a lot of things that happen and we completely blow it out of proportion. Completely blow it out of proportion. We completely emote, just like that guy Eric Bischoff talked about on TED Talks. We completely emote because that's what they want you to do. They don't want you to engage your mind. They want you just to feel and then react to the feeling. So back to the article. Kansas Governor Jeff Coyer, a Republican, chimed in. Quote, racial and discriminative language have no place in our society. Coyer sheepishly wrote, exonerating himself as at Klimp's expense. So today, racial and discriminative language that was clearly not used to discriminate or to inflict racial harm is racist. Saying master race to a garner gaped or gapped tooth solidarity or saying guerrilla tactics to praise the skill of a black tennis pro or nationalism to put country first is racism in the 21st century. Oh, there's a lot of things that are considered, quote, racism nowadays. It's amazing. Meanwhile, another hearing in the same week, Senator Kamala Harris, a reputed liberal from California, complete idiot, said ICE and the Ku Klux Klan is kind of the same thing. You mean the Immigration Enforcement Agency? ICE? They're the Ku Klux Klan? Really? Please, can someone get Kamala Harris a history book or go to YouTube or something? She's an idiot. But anyway, Americans are beyond sick of the non-stop focus on race, blacks and whites. Accusations are so false, so ruthless, so pathological, and so cultish that it is easy to predict that some sort of backlash is coming. Americans have had enough, and that's enough. I think I made my point. Yep, with that being said, as Christians, why is this even something that we're bringing into the church? You do understand that at the end of the day, real racism is all a part of the fall of man, a part of our fallen world, just as much as murder is, just as much as thievery is, and all other corrupt forms of evil. Racism is just another one of those. Justice, if there is to be had, will happen when the Lord judges all things righteously. See, as a Christian, that's how you should be focused. That's where you should be thinking. See, we have to stop conflating the stuff that the media wants us to believe is racism versus what actual racism is. Okay? When someone says someone's being racist or they are racist, I don't interpret that as, oh, he said a couple things that I'm supposed to find some hidden meaning, some buzzwords that's supposed to kind of hide their true racial intents. No, that's not how it's supposed to be. If someone's a racist, I need to see it. And if someone's being racist, it needs to be pretty blatant because real racism was open, unashamed, and it was blatant. Oh, well, they hide it all now. See, if that's what you believe, then there's nothing I can say to you because you believe everybody and everything is racist. So with that being said, that's the end of the show. That's the end of the Quickie Truth. This is the Luminary, signing off by saying you could chase a lie all over the world, but the truth, it stands where it stands. God bless.
What do you think is the future of the church in the United States?
Sad to say, there's counterfeit Christianity. People don't counterfeit brown paper and sticks. They counterfeit what's true. They counterfeit what's valuable. So wherever the truth is, look for most counterfeits to be surrounding the truth. There are all kinds of counterfeit forms of Christianity. There was recently a state of theology survey done among evangelicals. 78% of evangelicals think that Jesus was the most important person created by God. Well, that's not even a Christian doctrine. That's a denial of who Christ is. You're not an evangelical. I don't know what you are.
If you enjoyed that clip, there's more to come. Simply by going to thetruthstand.org and clicking on podcast episode number 3. That is thetruthstand.org.